Chapter 13. Venice didn't want to be here. She knew it was the right thing to do, but she'd give everything she had not to do what needed to be done. The rectory for St. Kate's Catholic Church looked just like the 1980s-era suburban house that it was, set well back from Church Street, situated between the church itself and the mansion that housed the administrative offices for Res House. Built of red brick and situated on about an acre of land, the two-story structure gleamed in the sunlight. The flowers that adorned the front bed and window boxes during spring and summer looked sad as the weather cooled. Doug Kramer was waiting for her at the front gate.
"Are you ready for this?"
"No, I'm not,"
Venice said.
"It's been a tough year. Too much of this." Kramer reached over the wrought iron spikes, disengaged the latch, and pushed the gate open.
"Let's get it over with, then."
He led the way down the mossy brick sidewalk, through the shadows of the two sprawling live oaks that adorned the yard. The door opened as the chief was reaching for the knocker. No matter how many times she saw it, she could never get used to seeing Father Dom dressed in civilian attire. He was barefoot and wore a green William and Mary sweatshirt and gray sweatpants. His unshaven face looked grim. Venice didn't remember seeing the lines around his eyes before.
"Is this what I think it is?" Dom asked.
"Not out here," Kramer said. "Let's step inside and have a seat."
Dom heaved a deep breath, then stepped aside to make a path for his guests. He motioned with an outstretched arm for them to take a seat in the library. In any other house of its size and age, the book-lined room would be a living room or maybe a TV room. But Father Dom was a bibliophile's bibliophile. There were, of course, the expected religious texts, but Dom was also an avid fan of mysteries and thrillers, and those commercial titles far outnumbered the inspirational ones. Dom sat on one side of the sofa along the wall opposite the front window, and Venice sat on the cushion next to him, a little closer than she normally would have. Kramer helped himself to the reading chair in the corner, but occupied only the front few inches of the seat.
"I'm sorry to be the one bringing the news," Kramer said, "but it seems you're already ahead of me. The police found Father Tim's body a couple of hours ago. He'd been shot."
Dom's shoulders and chest seemed to deflate, literally as if the air had escaped from them.
"Oh, shit," he said.
Venice and Kramer exchanged glances.
It was also hard to get used to hearing priests cuss.
"You know," Dom said, "you try to talk yourself into believing that the obvious will somehow not transpire. You try to talk yourself into believing that sometimes being a good man could somehow shield you from the bad stuff that happens to other people." He gave a wry smile. "Jeez, Doug, how many times have we made this visit to people's homes?"
The question made Kramer look uncomfortable, unsure whether to smile. Dom turned to Venice.
"And in tonight's performance, the role of caring shoulder will be played by Venice Alexander."
She caught the first hint of bourbon.
"I'm so sorry you have to go through this, Dom."
"What about Pam Hastings?" Dom asked. "She'd only been with Res House for a few weeks." Kramer's eyes answered ahead of his words.
"Also dead," he said. "I'm so sorry, Padre. They'd been..." He cut himself off.
"Not my first dance," Dom reassured. "I don't bruise anymore.
Kramer cleared his throat, looked at Venice, then got over it.
Whoever killed them moved the bodies about a mile away and placed them into a ravine.
Oh, God,
Venice moaned.
I believe the word you're searching for is dumped, Chief.
Dom said, his head sagged. Any idea who did it?
If they do, the locals aren't talking yet, Kramer said. I know this is the last thing you want to think about, but it won't be long until the press gets the story.
No reporters for me, Dom said.
He looked to Venice.
But Mama Alexander needs to be ready.
With the bodies found, Kramer said, and given the fact that they were handled, I'm thinking there's a good possibility for discovering physical evidence, trace evidence. His words seemed to embarrass him.
It's not much, but it's something.
Something about Kramer's delivery reminded Venice of Jonathan.
Sail past the emotional parts as quickly as possible and drill down on the operational details.
What about the boys? Dom asked.
Still no sign of them, Kramer said.
Sorry, I guess I should have led with that. The inspector I spoke to told me that nothing inside or outside the car or in the ravine or along the route that leads to it points to those two boys ever being there.
What would that look like? Venice asked.
Excuse me?
What evidence can prove the negative? Then they were not there. Kramer shifted again.
No one is saying that there's evidence the boys weren't there in the car, he said. They're only saying that there's no evidence indication that they were.
So what's the next step, Chief? Dom asked. Tim's family is from New England, Rhode Island.
You know the drill, Kramer said. For the time being, Father Tim's body is evidence. There'll be an autopsy, of course. After that, it'll be up to the Virginia State Police. They have jurisdiction on this.
What about alerting his family? Dom asked.
Right about now, give or take, police in Providence, Rhode Island, are having pretty much this conversation with Father Tim's family.
Dom looked at the floor with enough intensity that it drew Venice's gaze as well.
You know, he said, I feel like I'm out of ideas. Suddenly, I have no idea what to do or say.
Venice tapped his knee with her hand.
It's a lot to process.
Dom's head rocked up to look at Kramer, and then he stood.
Thank you for coming by, Doug, he said. I know that this isn't easy for you, either.
He extended his hand. Kramer stood and shook it.
Now, not to be rude, really the last thing I want to do is be rude, but would you mind leaving Ven and me for some alone time?
Kramer shot a concerned look to Venice, who gave a gentle shake of her head. She had no idea what was coming. There certainly was no threat. She watched as the priest escorted the chief to the door and let him out.
What was that about?
She asked when they were alone. Dom took his time answering. As he re-entered the library, he crossed to his reading chair.
I've been doing a lot of thinking over the past 36 hours or so, he said.
With his feet flat on the floor, he leaned his elbows on his knees.
What the hell are we doing here, Ven?
She cocked her head, knowing better to answer a cryptic question during an emotional time.
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
For years I've pretended that what Digger does is something other than what it is. I've told myself that justice trumps the law, and that the ends justify the means, all that death, all that killing, sooner or later, it had to come here. Look at you. Look at Derek. Venice hadn't expected the abrupt turn, and the swell of emotion at the mention of her deceased boyfriend's name startled her. Derek Hallstrom might have been the one for her, the first man she'd loved in a long time. He'd been killed during a firefight at the mansion while trying to protect her from the attackers.
"You've been drinking, Father," she said.
"Damn, Skippy, I've been drinking," Dom replied. "In fact, there's a very good chance that I will get quite drunk this evening. Been a long time since I've treated myself to a hangover." Did she really want to wander down this path? Maybe it was better just to leave.
"You know, I love Digger like he's a brother," Dom said. "Hell, I love him more than the guy who is my brother. I guess that secretly I've expected the violence to hit close to home, and given all that's happened over the years, I'd understand if it came to me. I even think I could talk my way into heaven. But I never thought it would come to the innocents."
Venice leaned back into the sofa cushion and crossed her legs. This might be a long one.
"I've had this dialogue with myself more than once," she said.
Dom smiled. "That would make it a monologue."
"Really?" she laughed. "Yeah, okay. I've had this monologue with myself a number of times. I try not to think of it in terms of eternal glory or eternal damnation, but I think about it in terms of what's right and wrong."
She paused to gather her thoughts, to make sure that she was going to say exactly what she was thinking.
"You know I've known Digger my whole life. Other than Mama and maybe Doug Kramer, I'm the only person you know who ever knew a boy named Jonathan Gravenow. He's a good man. Down to his heels and toes, he's a good man."
"No argument from me," Dom said. He stood and opened a cabinet door in the yew wood bookshelf along the perpendicular wall, revealing a wide selection of brown liquors.
"Want one?"
"No, thank you,"
Venice said. She fought the urge to give him a lecture about drunk shepherds tending their flocks, but she let it go. Maybe he'd earned this one. She watched him pour three fingers into one of the crystal whiskey glasses Jonathan had given him for Christmas a few years ago, then waited until he returned to his chair.
"I'm sorry," he said. "I didn't mean to interrupt."
"It's been a bad couple of days, Father. You do what you need to do. No judgment from me."
Again, she regrouped to gather her thoughts.
"You know, up until 100, 150 years ago, every city had a team of people who would take carts all around, from street to street, collecting dead animals. Somebody told me that in the late 1800s in New York City, 100 horses died every day. In nice neighborhoods, the carcasses were picked up. In not-so-nice neighborhoods, they were left to rot until the bones were light enough to be moved."
"The birth of the glue and dog food business," Dom quipped. Venice ignored his comment.
"We can agree that the men who collected those carcasses had the worst job in the city. And I would argue that they saved more lives than any doctor in the five boroughs. They endured stomach-churning awfulness to protect strangers from disease. Did you know that?"
"You'd likely be shocked at how little time I have dedicated to thinking about rotting horses," Dom said.
"What Digger does, what we do, is the modern-day equivalent of picking up horse carcasses. It's a stinky, awful job that no one in genteel circles wants to discuss, but it's still a job that needs to be done by somebody. Derek Hallstrom understood that. He was excited by the prospect of joining our team. Pam Hastings and Father Tim were victims, pure and simple. The very nature of Resurrection House, the fact that every resident has incarcerated parents, bakes a certain element of danger into its cake. You knew that when you took the job, Father. She'd said that last part about the job to be deliberately provocative. As she spoke, Dom eased himself back into the leather cushion of his reading chair. He held the bourbon up before his eyes and swirled it, affecting the posture of Hamlet addressing Yorick's skull. He took a healthy pull and rested the glass on the arm of his chair. "You're a good friend, Venice Alexander." His earnest smile sold the words. "But I'm terrible at this end of the grieving curve." Venice waited for the rest. "For decades, it's been my job to ease the burden of grieving for other people," he said. "My job is always to sit where you're sitting and project strength. I am the rock upon which Peter built his church, and I am thus the rock upon which my parishioners can bear their deepest, most disturbing secrets." Dom looked to the ceiling, maybe to God in heaven, apparently contemplating the poetry of his words. Venice watched him in silence, gave him his space. "Father Tim was a good priest," he said. "A good man. He deserved better." Venice said nothing. Sometimes the best thing for a friend to do is to just be there. She tried not to watch as Dom squinted against the tears he could not stop.